Hashem, we'll learn today Daf Peites. But first, let's look on Peches Amid Beis. Two lines up before the end of the Daf. Omar Rav Idi Bar Oven. Afanan Nami Tnina. The Gemara now is going to quote a Brisa from Masechta Makis to try to prove that there is such a thing called Takonis Usha. And this was accepted. Takonis Usha was well accepted. Now, before we read the Brisa itself, let's just say a few words to remind us about Takonis Usha. And that is that a woman who gets married and brings into the marriage nechasim, and the Baal has a right to eat the peros of these nechasim, technically, if not for Takonis Usha, she would have the authority, the power to sell her nechasim. In such a case that the in such a way that the lokeach would take over the entire karka, including the peros, after the death of the husband. Let's just ask the question: who died first, the Baal or the Isha? Let's take the case where the Isha dies first, and now, since she had sold her karka, meaning her nechasim, before she died, the lokeach wants to come along now and he wants to take the karka for himself. And since the Baal now, after the death of his wife, is a yoresh, the question is, do the rights of the lokeach, insofar as they bought the karka from the Isha, do they supersede the rights of the Baal and undermine his rights to be yoresh? In other words, they bought the karka. The Baal has peros, okay. He can eat peros as long as the marriage is chai v'kayim. But now that she died, the lokeach should have rights to take over the karka. And that's where Takonis Usha comes to the fore and establishes that we define the Baal as first rights as lokeach rishon. And therefore, when she dies, he inherits her, and the lokeach doesn't have any ability to take over the karka. The question only is, and this is a machlokas rishonim, whether or not during her lifetime the karka was transferred over to the lokeach, and he, the lokeach, acquired ownership over the guf hakarka. Again, as far as peiros are concerned, that surely belongs to the husband by virtue of the ksuba and the marriage relationship. But now, at least as far as guf is concerned, does he, the lokeach, own the guf hakarka? And it would seem from the Rambam in Perikov Beis Milchus Ishus that the guf hanechosim belongs to the lokeach. And therefore, after she dies, although we're going to take the nechosim out of the hands of the lokeach, but at least during her lifetime, he, the lokeach, has the ownership over the guf hakarka. And the nafkamina is going to be, let's say, for example, if he, the lokeach, owns the karka, the guf hakarka, during her lifetime, he could use it for a prusbul, because he only write a prusbul for someone who owns karka, or a nafkamina of agav, could he use this karka for a kinyan agav, since he owns the guf hakarka, or, for example, if a person has a kinyan aguf, he can impose a neder and asa that karka bahanoa bekonom on chavero. Anyway, the various nafkaminas, so such is the theoretical issue. In any event, the Rambam is clear that during the lifetime of the Isha, the lokeach has full rights, ownership over the guf hakarka. However, after she passes on, now the Takonis Usha pounces upon this karka and establishes that the Baal is lokeach rishon, and therefore he supersedes the lokeach who purchased the karka during her lifetime. So Rav Idi Bar Oven is now going to quote a brisa in Makis, in the Sugya Vedim Zomimim, to support and prove Takonis Usha. the Mishnah is going to speak, the Braisa is going to speak, and we'll see about the Mishnah too, about a scenario in which Edim testified against a woman that she received her ksuba, and she no longer has rights to collect her ksuba. Me'idim anu bishploni shegiresh es ishto v'nosan ksubasa. So the thrust of the testimony of the Edim who are about to become Zomimim is that she already collected Haksuba. She no longer has rights to collect Haksuba. Again, as far as the Baal is concerned, Rashi Masechta Makkah says that he denies that he ever divorced her, and Mimele he denies that he ever gave her the Haksuba, but there are Edim here to testify that indeed he divorced her and already paid the Haksuba. And now we're going to turn to Daf Peites Amud Aleph. Harei hi tachtov umeshamashto. In other words, as we're going to prove here through Edim Amazimim to disqualify the Edim Zomimim, the marriage still exists and they were never divorced. And the reason why the Braisa wants to tell us that she's tachtov umeshamashto, because if in fact, as the Edom have it, there was a get, right? Then, let's say, for example, other Edom come along who weren't Edom Zomimim, they testify that there was a divorce, but these Edom Zomimim testified that she already received her ksuba, and therefore the Edom will have to pay her the ksuba that they're being mafsid her when they turn out to be Edim Zomimim, because in fact she has rights to collect her ksuba. And that's why the Braisa emphasizes that tahtov umeshahi tahtov umeshamashto, to establish that now she still has rights to collect her ksuba in event that he, the husband, divorces her or he dies. And therefore, this Edus of the Edim Zomim is being mafsid Halik Suba. Even in a case where there are other Edim that testify that she really was divorced, still hasn't collected Halik Suba. Now, Nimtzu Zomim, the Braisa says, if two Edim come in and say you couldn't have possibly seen the divorce because you were with us at that day at a different place, and the Torah says in the case of Edim Zomimim, Vasisim Lokasha Zomim Lasos Liachiv, is Ein Omrim, don't say Yishalmu Kol Ksubasa. After all, they wanted to be Mafsid Hodik Suba, which she could have collected later on when, or if and when, he the husband, divorces her or he dies. And therefore now, since the Edim, who turn out to be Zomim, testified that she already collected a ksuba, she's lost her entire ksuba. The answer is that she can't collect the entire ksuba because there's a very good possibility that she might die and she'll never actually collect the ksuba. In other words, her rights to the ksuba may or may not materialize. Ella, but rather, what should the Edim pay? Tovas hanas ksubasa. How much could she sell, for what price could she sell her ksuba on the market? Now, a buyer would make the following calculation. Let's say her ksuba is worth X, but there's a chance, let's call it a 33% chance that she might die before the husband. If the buyer would only know that she would die before the husband, and she won't collect the ksuba, he would never put out a dime for this ksuba. But on the other hand, the stakes are high here, because if her husband dies first, or he divorces her, on those two possibilities, the buyer will now collect the entire ksuba. So that's called tofas hanah. Tofas hanah means someone would, you know, calculating the risk factor, somebody would pay. It's like, you know, you sell futures or you sell a company, and the buyer figures out, well, if such and such happens, that company will go up in value. It's worth it for me to pay not that full value, but at least part of it. That's called tovas hanah. And now that Tovus Hanor represents the amount of money that she owns in the Ksuba, because she can materialize that and cash in by selling a Ksuba for that price on the market. Now the Edom say she has no rights to Ksuba. She's already collected a Ksuba. These Edom Zomim caused her to lose that Tovus Hanor. And now the Brisa even embellishes this further. How do we figure out, how do we calculate Tovus Hanor? Ezu Tovus Hanor as Ksuba. So Omdim Kama Onim Rotsa Litein B'Ksuba Shel Zu. Shimnis Armala Onis Garisha. How much would a person be willing to pay and to buy a Ksuba that if she outlives her husband or her husband divorces her, the ksuba will be collected by the isha. Now the lokeach who bought this ksuba will be able to collect the ksuba. And included in this calculation is not just the mana masayim, the basic what we call ikar ksuba, which the baal would have to pay, but also what we call nichsei tzom barzel. Those are nechasim that the woman brought into the marriage. They're written down in the ksuba. That's called nichsei tzon barzel. If they go up in value, go down in value, that's the problem of the husband. But the nechasim are evaluated as they are when the marriage took place, and she has rights to that evaluation, to that sum, if and when the ksuba becomes reality, he divorces her or he dies. So again, the lokeach wants to calculate based on, again, every ksuba is different and its value is going to shift. But the value of the ksuba, which represents both the mona masayim, the ikar ksuba that maybe the lokeach will be able to collect, and the nichsei tzon barzel that are written in the ksuba. And in mesa, if on the other hand she dies before the husband, Yerushena Baila, and the Baal, through his Yerusha, inherits the entire Ksuba, he doesn't have to pay any part of the Ksuba, and therefore the Lokech will get nothing. So the Lokech again has to calculate these risk factors. The more the Ksuba is worth, if the Lokech will realize his investment and collect that ksuba, then the more he's willing to pay for the ksuba as a risk factor. And whatever sum you come up with, that's what the Edom Zomim have to pay, because that's what they were mafsid her as a result of their testimony that she already collected the ksuba and she cannot collect it, and she could have sold her ksuba on the market. Well, Emir Tzashem will mention the Tosfos Dibra Maskel Omar a little bit later on, because Tosfos is going, and that Tosfos begins on Peches Amid Beis, that Tosfos is going to analyze why the Gemara wanted to base itself on a Braisa when pretty much the same story is written in the Mishnah itself in Masechta Ksuba. So why quote a Braisa when you could have quoted a Mishnah? In any event, now we get to Takonas Usha. V'isalka Daktif Lesol Takonas Usha. If you're of the opinion that if a woman sells her nechasim to the buyer, then that sale is valid, and after she dies, let's say the nechasim that she brought into the marriage accrue to the lokeach. Is amai? Why does the Braisa say Yerushena Baila, that when we calculate how much the Tovus Hanor, how much the buyer would be willing to pay, it's based on the fact that if she dies b'chai Baila, then the lokeach is out in the cold. You know, he gets absolutely nothing, because Yerushena Baila, meaning the Brisa establishes that if she dies first, the Baal inherits the ksuba, and the lokeach loses, he's left with nothing, and that's going to reduce the amount of money that he wants to pay because of that risk factor, is to zaben ksubasa legamre. Let's say she sells the ksuba, and in that case, the lokeach gains those nechasim. If she sells the nechasim that she brought into this marriage, then the nechasim that are written, or the value of the nechasim that are calculated at the time of the marriage, written in the ksuba, that is sold to Lokeach, and even if she dies first, the Baal will not be able to yarshin those nechasim and be mafkia the Lokeach, because Lokeach is first. He's Lokeach Rishon. Again, that's without Takonis Usha. So the worth, the value of the ksub on the market is not really accurately reflected by Tovus HaNoah, because in addition, forget about the Tovus HaNoah here, what about the Nechasim factor here, the Nechasim that are written in the ksuba, which the Lokeach is guaranteed to own those Nechasim with the death of the Isha. And it's not true that if she dies first, the Baal inherits her and all the ksuba is his. That's not true, because she can sell the nechasim that she brought into the ksuba. Elamai, we must be assuming in this price so that Takonis Usha is in effect, which guarantees that her sale of the nechasim during her lifetime to the Lokeach is not going to be valid, because the Baal is defined as the Lokeach Rishon, and he undermines the ability of the Lokeach to materialize his kinyan. Amar Abai, Abai says no. You know what? It's true that the Braisa certainly understood and is premised on that a woman cannot sell the ksuba, but that doesn't prove Takonis Usha. Why? Im Amru b'nichse melug, Yomru b'nichse tzon barzel. Abai differentiates between two types of nechasim that are brought in by her into the marriage. Nichse melug on the one hand, nichse tzon barzel on the other hand. The subject of this brisa that we're studying is nichse tzon barzel. Nichse tzon barzel, as we said before, the karka is evaluated, and there's a certain sum that's written in the ksuba, but as far as the gufa karka is concerned, in the case of Tzon Barzel, that karka is Birshus HaBaal, which means, as the Gemara establishes in Yevamos, if the karka goes up in value, the Baal gains, because he owns the karka. If it goes down in value, he loses. And that sum of money he'll pay in the ksuba. Now, forget about Takonis Usha. A woman cannot sell Nichse Tzon Barzel, because basically she doesn't own the karka, the Baal owns the karka. That's the nature of the ksuba agreement with regard to Nichse Tzon Barzel. The Braisa says that the Edim don't have to pay the full value of the nechasim in the ksuba, because those are Nichse Tzon Barzel. She cannot sell those nechasim during Chai Baila. And therefore, if she dies b'chai b'ayla, the Baal inherits that karka. And therefore, the within the context of Yerusha, the Baal will inherit those karkos and any karkos that weren't sold, and she cannot sell nechse tzon barzel. And therefore, the Braisa is actually very miduyak, very meticulous, in the sense that the only value that she could sell here to a lokeach is the tovus hanoah, that if the Baal dies or divorces her, then the nechasim go back to the isha and the lokeach wins out. But on the other hand, if she dies first, then the Baal has the rights of Yerusha. She cannot sell the nechse tzon barzel, and therefore you cannot jack up the price, add to the price of Tovus HaNoah that the lokeach would be willing to pay based on nechse tzon barzel, because again the lokeach has to take in mind the fact that if she dies, then the Baal will be Yorishar, and all those nechasim that she brought into the marriage, which are called Nichse Tzon Barzel, they accrue to the Baal, and the Lokeach doesn't have rights to them. The Baal will inherit them. She doesn't have rights to sell it to the Lokeach. And Memela, we cannot prove from this Braisa, we cannot establish Takonis Usha. Again, what was the original proof from Takonis Usha that the Gemara Ravidi Bar Ravan wanted to bring from the Braisa? That if there was Takonis Usha, then the value of that she suffers by losing her rights in the ksuba is only limited to Tovas HaNa'ah. And the question was, wait a minute, forget about Tovas HaNa'ah. She could sell Har Nechasim, and the Lokeach would gain Har Nechasim. Whatever Nechasim she brought into the marriage, which are written in the Ksuba, that's what the Lokeach will inherit without Takonis Usha. And therefore, we have to jack up the price on the market, the value of this ksuba, on from the perspective of the Lokeach, to include, to reflect also his ability through this purchase to acquire ownership over Hanachasim. And the answer must be, no, that if she dies, the Baal will Yarshin Hanachasim, because Takonis Usha establishes the Baal as the first dibs, as the primary owner and possessor of Hanachasim. Then, and only then, can we justify the Braisa, so says Rav Yehudi Bar Ovin, that the Edim Zomim will pay maximum Tovas HaNa'ah, and not any additional prices and value that she could have gotten from a Lokeach by selling Hanachasim, the Nechasim in the Ksuba. Says Abai, there's no Raya. She definitely, forget about Takanas, she definitely doesn't have rights to sell those Nechasim, insofar as they are Nechasim Tzom Barzel, which im olu olu lo, vim yardu yardu lo, meaning that the Karka itself, once the Karka was subject to Shuma, and that Shuma, that evaluation was written in the Ksuba, the Karka itself, the Gufa Karka, belongs to the Baal, and she has no rights to sell the Gufa Karka, so the Lokeach would never even buy those Nechasim from the Isha, because, you know, with the death of the Isha, the Baal inherits her. Now again, had the Braisa addressed a different discussion, namely Nichse Malug, which are Nechasim that are brought in by her to the marriage but are not written in the Ksuba, which means that she owns the Guf HaKarka, the Baal, through the framework of Takonis Ksuba, receives and enjoys the benefits of the peros of Nichse Malug, but the Guf HaKarka is clearly hers. If the Braisa had discussed that element, that dimension of Nichse Malug, then surely she could sell the Nichse Malug, and the Lokeach, if not for Takonis Usha, would pay money for the Nichse Malug, because he wants to own those Nichse Malug when she dies. And in that sense, Takonis Usha jumped into the picture here and blocked the Lokeach here, gave these Nichse Malug, awarded them to the Baal, B'toris Yerusha. He becomes like the Lokeach Rishon. But if not for Takonis Usha Eino Chinami, she could sell Nichse Malug, and that would, of course, jack up the Tovas, add to the Tovas HaNa'ah a whole new element. And Takonis Usha is the agent, the halachic legal agent by which the sale of Nichse Malug is blocked, is undermined, setting up the Baal as the primary Lokeach, and undermining the position of the Lokeach who bought it from her. That is true. But that's not the reason why the Nechasim are not coming into calculation here in terms of what the Edim Zomim tried to be mafsid her in the Tovas HaNa'ah, because the Braisa is addressing the case of Nichse Tzon Barzel, completely irrelevant to Nichse Malug. So again, had the Braisa discussed Nichse Malug and omitted any discussion of the value that's jacked up, the value of the sale of the ksuba that's jacked up, reflecting the Nichse Malug, that would certainly be, the fact that the Braisa ignored Nichse Malug, that would certainly be proof positive that Takonis Usha is in effect. But in fact, the subject of this Braisa is Nichse Tzon Barzel. And I want to point out to you that Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz explains that in the question of the Gemara, the raya that Rav Yehudi Bar Ovin originally wanted to bring from this braisa, the issue was Nichse Tzon Barzel. You might ask, well, what about Mona Masayim? In fact, and this is a great chiddush of the Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, she, during her lifetime, cannot sell nichsei, cannot sell mona masayim. And the reason for that is that's a dover shelo baliola. I mean, that chiyuv doesn't exist yet. The baal was never mischayev befall to pay mona masayim. It was all a theoretical ischayvus. And whatever the tovus hanor that the lokech would want to purchase is really inherent in and expressed by the nichsei tzom barzel. And Tosfos here, Dibra Maschel Omar, which starts on the previous Omud and continues here to our Omud, uses this Svara to explain why the Gemara here, Rav Yehuda bar Ravin, based himself on the Braisa, when there's something almost identical in the Mishnah in Makkos. Why quote a Braisa when you could have quoted a Mishnah? And there too, the Edom testified that a person divorced his wife. He did not pay the ksuba, meaning they're coming to be machayev the baal to pay the ksuba. They turned out to be zomimim, and they wanted to be mafsa the baal's ksuba, shalok yedin, of course. And there too, it is clear that the edim don't have to pay the entire value of the ksuba, because since if he would have died first, or if he would divorce her, and he would give her the ksuba in any event, so it's very possible that the edim are not being mafsid in the ksuba, because even without the edim, he'd have to pay the ksuba. And therefore, the mission establishes that we do an umdana, how much a person would, what's it worth to a person, such that she would collect the ksuba if tis almein o tis garish, v'im tomas p'chai bala v'yirashena yafsid es haksuba. Is really the differential, the discrepancy between a vadai ksuba, which the edim are being mechayev him, and a safek ksuba, which maybe he wouldn't even have to pay. Maybe if she dies first, then hey, you know, he won't pay the ksuba, and the chiv ksuba mona masai will not even materialize. And lechora, even from this mishnah, we could prove takonas usha, because if she could sell the ksuba during her lifetime in such a way that the baal cannot be motzi miyad alokeach, and it would be a full-fledged acquisition on the part of lokeach, then even in this case, since she could sell her ksuba, in the case of the Mishnah, and she could sell the entirety of ksuba in such a way that her husband will not yarshin it, then yischayev baal l'shalem es kol ksubasa. Now the Edom Zoma are saying that the baal has to pay the entire ksuba, even if she would die first, and therefore the hefsed here that the Edom imposed upon him is very limited. It's a davar muat. If not for takonis ushan, she has rights to sell the ksuba. That means that even if she dies first, the lokeach will inherit the ksuba, and he will demand the payment for the ksuba from the baal. In which case, the baal, by virtue of these edim, is not losing anything, because even without the edim, he's going to have to pay the ksuba, if not to the isha, to the lokeach. And the answer is, says Tosfos, because our Mishnah is talking about the chiyuv of mona masayim, that a baal has been mischayev to the isha and the ksuba, and that chiyuv is not chal until the time that he dies or he divorces her. And now, b'chaya baal, before he divorces her, he doesn't have to pay her anything. And therefore, it's poshut that she cannot sell this chov, even without takonas usha, as we saw in the Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, because how could she sell something that she doesn't have yet? The chov and the chiyuv, the schaivus of the baal, has not yet come to fruition. And therefore, from that Mishnah, you could not prove takonas usha. To summarize, the subject of the Mishnah in Ksubis, at the beginning of Masechta Makkos, is mona masayim. The fact that the edim were mafsid him, the baal, mona masayim, by saying that he has to pay the ksuba, when there's a possibility that he would never have to pay the ksuba. Now you're telling me he would definitely have to pay the ksuba because she would sell the ksuba. She doesn't have rights, and she doesn't have bailus over the mona masayim to sell that to a lokeach. And therefore that Mishnah has nothing to do whatsoever with Takonis Usha. Omar Abaye. Now, at this point, the Gemara wants to discuss this concept of Tovas Hanah. Tovas Hanah ho v'yosel yodem, says Abaye, if we're discussing Tovas Hanah, name of Milsa, I'd like to say something that's relevant to Tovas Hanah. Now, a woman sells her ksuba on the market at a value called Tovas Hanah, and the buyer has the schus to collect the ksuba if she outlives her husband or she receives a get. Says Abaye, the money that she receives from the lokeach, which is called Tovas Hanah, is La Isha Havya. That money belongs to her. She sold it. And even though normally anything that Masha Kansa Isha Kana Baila, and certainly the Baal would have rights to Achilus Peros in a normal sense, here in the case of Tovas Hanah, the Baal is completely excluded. He doesn't have any Bailus whatsoever in this money that she receives from selling the ksuba, which we call Tovas Hanah. Now, the reason for this we'll explain later on, but first, how does Abaye know such a thing? If you would entertain the possibility that the Baal owns the damim that she receives when she sells her ksuba, then getting back to the brisa that we just discussed before about Edim Zomimim, who testified on a woman that she already received her ksuba, and they have to pay her Tovas Hanah, Lemrula Edim, let the Edim counter argue and claim, My afsidinach. What hefse did we cause you in your edus? I have a mizavnint la, letovas hanah, bal havi shakal minach. Even if you would sell the ksuba, and that's what you're claiming, that had it not been for these Edim who testified that you already received the ksuba, she could have sold the ksuba. And she would sell it for Tovas Hanah, but if she sells it for Tovas Hanah, she would not receive those damim for herself because the Baal would take them away. If not for Abaye's conclusion that these monies that she receives as from the lokeach as Tovas Hanah are hers and exclusively hers. Otherwise, what hefse did the Edom cause? Did the Edom cause her? Because what's she going to say? Well, you know what? If not for you, I could have sold my ksuba on the market. Yeah. What do you mean, sold the ksuba on the market? But what benefits do you gain from selling the ksuba if the monies that you gain are transferred over to the Baal through via the principle of Masha Kansa Isha Kana Baila? Says Abaye, obviously the predicate of this brisa is that Tovas Hanah, when she sells her ksuba, belong to her, and all the monies that are paid by the buyer are hers, exclusively hers, and therefore when the Edim testify that she's already received her kesef ksuba, they're being mafsid on the Tovas Hanah that she could sell her ksuba, if not for these Edim, and the damim that she would receive by selling her ksuba, the Tovas Hanah money would be hers. But now that the Edim came and testified that she has already received her ksuba, she can no longer sell her ksuba, she loses, she forfeits all that Tovas Hanah. And under the law of Kasher Zomim, that's what the Edom have to pay her. The Gemara says, now that's no proof. With all due respect to Abaye's logic, Rav Shalman says, you know what? Even if the Baal is able to take away and be Zoche in the Tovas Hanah, the monies that she receives from the Lokeach, nevertheless, a woman still gets benefit by selling her Ksuba Mishum the Ika Revach Besa. Because any monies that she receives for the sale of the ksuba will ultimately go back into the system and they will be reinvested as parnosa. Revach beso means parnosas beso, which means that the Baal will use the monies to support her and the family. I mean, that's exactly the structure of the ksuba, that any monies that she receives through wages, that's called Maisiya Dayam, or Mitzios, if she finds things, whatever it is, she inherits things, those go back into the system, meaning the Baal takes over those monies in order that he can fulfill his obligation of Mizonos, which means to support the family. So therefore, you know, when we talk about the hefsed that she loses here by virtue of the Eidim, because she cannot sell a ksuba, that's a serious hefsed, because had she sold the ksuba, there would be an influx of money into the system such that the Baal would now be able to be mefarnes her and her family properly, and maybe even on a higher level. And therefore, the Eidim are chayv b'toras Eidim zomimim for being mafsid her this tovas hanah. Again, the Rishonim here go to town because, you know, it's not really the tovas hanah that she should be getting. Again, she gets a certain hanah because of the revach beso, because the Baal will use some of those monies that come into her possession and are transferred to his bank account through the din of ksuba from those lochim, from the lekuchas who bought the ksuba, and some of that money is not going to go back as revach besa, as parnos and mizonos. But nevertheless, that's not equivalent to the value of the tovas hanah itself as the lokech would pay on the market. And the answer apparently is that the Eidim Zomim nevertheless have to pay the entire shear of tovas hanah, because what they have to do is they have to guarantee that even after the Baal takes his chelek in the monies that she gains from the Eidim, there's still enough for her to have a revach besa, and that's really what they wanted to be mafsid of. In any event, it comes out that Rav Shalman rejects the proof from this brisa to establish takonas usha, but Omar Rava, nevertheless, Rava establishes hilchasa tovas hanah le'isha and ein habal ochel peros. So let's go over this. Rav Shalman already rejected the proof that any tovas hanah belongs exclusively to her, but Rava, in fact, paskins that any tovas hanah belongs exclusively to her. And the reason for that is because ein habal ochel peros, my taima, even though within the framework of the ksuba, the Baal gets rights to any nechasim that come into her possession, but pera takinu le rabbanon, pera de pera lo takinu le rabbanon. To assume that the Baal should now receive the tovas hanah as rights and gain rights to eat the peros, that's already taking the takona of peros one step beyond the limitations, the bounds of this takona. That's called pera de pera, meaning a woman brings in a chasim into the marriage, okay, fine, the Baal gets peros and he enjoys the benefits of those nechasim. But now, peri de peri, in other words, we're not talking about the original peros themselves, but we're talking about some sort of, you know, revach, some sort of interest or plus that she gains from those peros, meaning that now she sells the ksuba for tovas hanah, is lo tkinu le rabbanon. The Rabbanan never established that the Baal has rights to eat peros from the peri of the peros. The revach, the increase, the increment that she gains from selling her ksuba, which is called tovas hanah, that's not called peros. That's not so something that she brought into the marriage and that belonged to the Baal as far as peri is concerned. But rather, this is a zaitiga revach. This is something tzadi, it's side, that she has. And on that, the Baal does not have rights to eat peros. The Gemara now invokes another proof to establish takonas usha ki asa Rav Papa Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua Mibei Rav. They came from the Beis Medrash of Rav. Omri, and they said, Tanina, there is a Mishnah that embodies with takonas usha that is predicated on the takonas usha, and that's our Mishnah here in Perek HaChovil on Pei Zayin. The Mishnah says, "Ha Eved," we're talking about an Eved Kanani, "Va Isha Pigiyasan Ra," which means that if they damage others, they don't pay, and if others damage them, they do pay. Chovel b'hem chayov ve'i ve'hem shechovel b'achirim p'turim. V'isal k'day tach lesel takonis usha. If you bracket takonis usha, which means that a woman could sell hanichse malug in a total sale, that would be valid, so that the lokeach could now take her nechasim and possess them, after the misa, after the death of the woman, is then is tizabein nichsei malug titein le. Why does the Mishnah assume that a woman, a married woman, cannot pay dmei chavol if she was chovah b'cherev? After all, she could sell a ksuba, and she has nichsei malug. The buyer will possess these nichsei malug, and he's going to pay good price, good money for that. Now she has money in her account. And again, we could add here the conclusion of Rava that Tovas Anola Isha Vieta Balochel Peros. In any event, she now has an income, monies which belong to her exclusively, and now she can pay the Nechbal. She can pay the person who was victimized. Why does the Mishnah assume that she doesn't have anywhere to pay from? And there's no money in her possession or bank account. Oh, so the Gemara says, wait a minute. Ulitamech. You know what? Forget it. That's not going to prove Takonas Usha. Nehi nami di Isa litakonas Usha. Even if I grant you Takonas Usha, you still haven't really logically explained why she doesn't have to pay Dmei Chavola. Because what are you going to tell me? Based on Takonas Usha, she has no ability to be makna, a full-fledged kinyan, an absolute kinyan to the lokeach, because the Baal, according to the Takonas Usha, is motzi v'yad lokeach, he, the Baal, is lokeach, v'shalo motzi v'zavna, l'gamri, but t'zavi l'nichse melug b'tovas hana, at least she does have the ability, even within the framework of Takonas Usha, to sell nichse melug as a tovas hana, which means that she'll get something from a potential buyer who's going to pay for the zchus and these nechasim, such that if he dies first, meaning the Baal dies first, or he divorces her, the lokeach will receive these nechasim. Again, Takonas Usha only establishes that if she dies first, the Baal bumps off and trumps the lokeach, but what happens if he dies first or he divorces? So then she collects the ksuba, and in such a case, the mechira to the lokech is valid. So the lokech really has really serious vested interest here in paying for this tovas hana. That being the case, v'titein lei, meaning let her pay with this money that she sells to the lokech, the ksuba, to the nechbal. Elo, what are you going to have to say? That the Mishnah is talking about a case, the Lesla, that she has no Nichsei Malug. She didn't bring anything into the marriage, and therefore she cannot sell the Ksuba and the Nichsei Malug on the open market, and therefore she cannot liquidate assets which could be used to pay the Nechbal. It's Hachanami, the Lesla. Here too, even if we would assume that there is no Takonas Usha, there's no question from the Mishnah. Lesla, meaning she doesn't have any nechse malug, and that's why the Mishnah says that she doesn't have to pay. She cannot pay the nechbal because she has nothing. Ah, you'll tell me, let her sell nechse malug. The case is where she doesn't have nechse malug. And you're forced to assume so, even if you reject Takonas Usha. Because certainly the lokeach would be willing to buy the nichsei malug from the isha, if she had such nechasim, based on the risk factor that maybe instead of her dying first, he'll die first, or he'll deliver a divorce, and then the mechira and the acquisition of lokech is absolutely complete. He takes over the karka, so therefore she can't sell and liquidate her ksuba even without takanas usha. But the answer must be that we're talking about a metzius, a scenario in which she doesn't possess nichsei malug, she didn't bring in the chasim into the marriage. Now the very premise of this sugya is problematic. The premise that if she did have nichasim, nichsei malug, when she came into the marriage, she could sell those nichsei malug and liquidate assets, and the lokeach would gain if, in case the Baal divorces her or he dies first. Says the Pnei Yeshua, based on a sugya in Ksubas Nuntes, this is an issue of Ein Odom Makne Dover Shalom Bal Yola. What is she selling? She's selling the Nichsei Malug just in case he dies and he won't be able to inherit her after she dies or he divorces her.
How can the mekach, how could such a sale of haksuba, meaning the nechasim in the ksuba, be valid based on the fact that in the future, maybe, she'll have rights to this karka, to these nechsei baluk. Right now, she doesn't have any rights to them. So how could she possibly sell her nechsei baluk on the market? And based on this kasha, the Pnei Yoshua says that our sugya, you can only understand our sugya if you invoke the unique shita of Rav Huna, Rav Yeshua, and Rav Papa there in Masechta Ksubos, that Dovah Shaboli Olam or Dovah Shalo Boli Olam depends upon whether the object is in the world. Does a physical, material object exist? If it does, then you can sell it even if your zchusim, your rights, have not yet materialized themselves. But Enochinami, according to the Maskon of the Sugya there in Ksubos, rejecting that shita, she could not sell her nechsei maluk b'tova sanoa because the zchus that she has in these nechasim is a davar shelo bal yolam. If and when the baal dies or divorces her, then she has the zchusim in these nechasim. But right now, she cannot possibly sell them because she doesn't have zchusim. It's not enough that the karka itself exists in the veld. That's not enough. And therefore, this whole sugya would not really work out according to the Maskonas HaGemara in Ksubos. It only works out according to the Hava Mina, which is Rav Huna and Rav Papa, that she can sell a karka that exists, even though she has no schusim right now in the karka. The language of the Gemara here of the Lesla is a little bit interesting. Hachinami, the Lesla, as if there are two different things. You know, we're borrowing it here and we're applying it here. Really, we're only dealing with our Mishnah, and our Mishnah must be established where she has no nechsei malug. The Gemara now asks a different question. Wait a second. You're telling me Pigyasan Ra, she cannot be collectible. She cannot be forced to pay the Dmei Chavola. Wait a second. Vitizabein Ksubasa Bitovasana, what about the mana masayim of the ksuba that the Baal will have to pay for her ksuba if the ksuba materializes itself, if he dies or he divorces her? That's also worth something on the market. And since B'nai Adam, people might actually purchase the ksuba at a price, and that's called a tovasana price based on the probability or the possibility that he may die first or divorce her. That money is now liquidable. She can liquidate that money by selling the mana masayim of haksuba v'titein lei, and let her pay the nechbal those tashlumin that the nechbal deserves based on her sale of the mana masayim of the ksuba. And the Gemara answers, Hamani, our Mishnah reflects the shita of Rabbi Meir. He, the Amar Rabbi Meir, is of the opinion also liodam sheyashe es ishto. Afilu sha'achas below ksuba. This is against the shita of the chachamim in Ksubos, that a person is allowed to be married to a woman without a ksuba for 2 or 3 years. Not endlessly. There's a ceiling, there's a cap. But Rabbi Meir holds that no, immediately there has to be a ksuba. So what are you telling me now? You're telling me now, let her sell the ksuba v'tovas hanoah, the mana masayim? No. That would undermine the entire ishus, meaning the way that Chazal, according to Rav Meir, established ishus, they designed ishus, the marriage relation, to include ksuba, to include mana masayim. And without the ksuba, it's babish like a bilaz nus, according to the takana, within the framework of the takana's chacham requiring ksuba. And therefore, if it's a bilas nus, is he can't go on in such situations. So therefore, the entire premise that you've been operating with, namely that she can sell her ksuba, that's antithetical to the shita of Rabbi Meir. And therefore, you're telling me, well, let her pay Tmei Chavol to the Nechbal based on the monies that she will receive by selling her ksuba. The answer is Rabbi Meir holds that she cannot sell her ksuba, meaning her mana masayim. She doesn't own any nechasim beyond the money masai, meaning the nechsei melug. So therefore, there's no money for her to receive at all. No cash that she can bring into her possession in order to pay off the nechbal. Now, truth be told, that even according to the Chachamim, there's an isa to be shmasha and isha below ksuba. Just that the Chachamim are a little bit more liberal. They give you a couple of years, let's say a year or two, to live with your wife without the ksuba. But the truth is that she can sell her ksuba not for an indeterminate infinite amount of time, but at least she could sell the ksuba for a year or two, up to 3 years, and she'll get a certain pittance. You know, somebody would want to buy the ksuba so that if by chance her husband dies, or he sends the mafia, no, I'm just kidding, or he divorces her within that period of time, then the lokeach would be able to collect the money masayin. And then, according to Chachamim, she has the ability and the potential to sell and bring in some amounts of money. And therefore, our Mishnah would have to reflect the shita of Rabbi Meir that she cannot sell the ksuba at all, period. The Gemara rejects this. V'taima mai, what's the logic of Rabbi Meir? Kadesh lo tehei kala v'enav lehotzia. The reason why Rabbi Meir insists that the ksuba has to be outstanding, it has to be activated and valid, is because otherwise he might get angry and just throw her a get. And if there's no ksuba, what's going to deter him from doing so? You have to have an albatross around his neck, namely that he'll have to pay a significant sum of ksuba. But hacha, here in this case, where Rameir himself could admit that she could sell a ksuba, but lo megarishla, there still is that inhibiting factor, which makes it difficult for him to divorce. The Magarish law also hanach the zavne the gavolok ksubasa mine. What difference to make whether Baal pays the ksuba, the money assigned to the isha directly, or pays it to the lekuach who bought the ksuba from the isha? In both cases, as a result of this divorce, he's going to have to pay this very stiff sum called the ksuba money assigned. And therefore, we come back to our original question. Why can't she sell the ksuba and take the dmei tovas hanah and pay the nechbal? Why is it pkiyasan ra ella? The answer is tovas hanah mili ninu mili lo mishtabde. The reason why she doesn't have to sell her ksuba in order to pay the nechbal is because tovas hanah is called dvarim. It's not really mammon. Yes, she owes money to the nechbal, but that ownership, which is called, that owing, that chov, is called a shibud. And with regard to a shibud, the shibud is chal on mamon. You know, you have karka, that shibud is chal on karka, but we said she has no karka. Elo what, the shibud is chal on the fact that she could sell her ksuba for tovas hanor. That's already a theoretical, abstract kind of potential for her to get monies, but right now she, you know, the nechbal cannot say, well, I own a shibud in X, you know, your property, your material object is lien to me, L-I-E-N, and therefore we're not going to be mechayva to sell the ksuba for dmei hanon in order to pay up the nechbal, because the nechbal doesn't have the shibud of the nechbal, and his rights to be reimbursed for his chavola don't go as far as the fact that she could theoretically, you know, get monies by selling her ksuba b'tovas hanor. He, the nechbal, doesn't have a shibud for that. The Gemara is not happy with that. Alama lo. Why wouldn't there be a shibud even on the possibility for the isha, the choveles, to sell the ksuba mili the mizdavni bin dinari ninhu? After all, these dvarim, as you call them, can be sold, and therefore the tovas hanah is like any other shavius, any other dovra shavu moment. It has inherent value, and that's included in the shibud to the nechbal. Ella, but rather we have to give a different answer. Mishum dishmuel. You want to know why she doesn't have to sell her ksuba in order to pay the nechbal? That's because of Shmuel. Diomer Shmuel amocher shtar chov lechavero vechazar umecholo machul.
Shmuel says something that's really very fundamental, very pelodic. He says that let's say Shimon owes a chov to Reuven. Reuven's the malva, Shimon's the lova, and Reuven receives from the lova, from Shimon, a shtar chov. He can sell the shtar chov on the open market, such that the lokeach can now collect directly from Shimon the lova, but it's a very iffy and tricky situation, because buying this shtar chov is not really secure. It's not like buying a bond, a U.S. government bond. Why? Because the malva, the seller, in this case Reuven, can go ahead and be mochel the chov of the lova. And that mechila is mochel. The chov is completely wiped off, and the lokech is stuck with a shtar that has no validity and no capacity to collect with. Because even though a person sells the shtar chov, but the shibud is always a shibud to the malva. And that is a non-transferable shibud. The lova owes the malva. The ability of the lokeach to collect the chov when he buys this chov is not because he owns the chov, but because he has rights to, so to speak, stand or represent, stand in the shoes of the malva who sold him the shtar and collect from the lova. And the lova has no right to say, well, I don't know who you are, I don't recognize you, I didn't borrow money from you, go fly a kite, la bal dvarim didiat. No. The lokeach now becomes the bailim over the shtar, but as far as the chefta shel chov is concerned, the shtar is representative of the chov, but the chov itself remains the chov that the lova owes the malva, and the malva owns that chov, and therefore the ability of the lokeach who purchased this shtar chov to collect the chov and materialize his rights in this chov is conditional. It's contingent on the fact that the mocher did not go ahead and exercise his rights to implement mechila. And afilu yoresh mochel, even if the malva is gone, the heirs of the malva inherit the shibud between the lova and their father, the malva, and now the heirs can be mochel lechov. Because again, the Yoresh now steps into the feet of his father, the shoes of his father, the Malva, as far as this Chov is concerned. And the Lova doesn't have to pay the Lokeach. Because the Mechila of either the Malva himself, if he's alive, or his Yorshim, if the Malva is gone, is a valid Mechila. And therefore the Lova is completely potter by virtue of this Mechila. So now let's get back to the case that we're discussing about an Isha who wants to sell her ksuv on the open market, b'tovas hana. You know what? She can be mochel the chov, because the Baal owes this ksuba to her and exclusively to her. And according to the principle of Shmuel, she can be mochel as that chov, and the lokech is left in the lurch, and he's completely lost any monies that he paid to the Isha for to make ksuba. Because now, even if the Baal divorces his wife, or he dies, nevertheless, the Baal will not pay to the Lokeach, because the Isha went ahead, and she was Mocheles, and therefore she pockets up the Baal from any Chiyuvah, and the Lokeach has no wherewithal to collect from the Baal. So the Gemara says, well, that doesn't undermine her ability to sell the Ksuba. Amri, they ask the question, Zvune Zavne, let the buyer buy the ksuba, and he's going to hold out for the fact that she, the seller, the isha, will not be mochel the chov ksuba to the husband. And v'titein lei, let her give that money that the lokeach pays her for the ksuba to the nechbal. The e mochel lei legabi baal, and if she went ahead and she decides at the end of the day that she wants to be mochel this chov vis-a-vis the baal, timchala, let her be mochelit. And unfortunately, the lokeach will take a loss here. But what's that our business? The lokeach knew that such a possibility lurks or exists on the horizon. And therefore, if he decided to take a chance, maybe he'll lower the price that he'll pay. But he paid the price and let her sell the ksuba. And let's insist that Bez didn't force her to sell the ksuba. Compel her to take some money in to pay the nechbal. And the Gemara says, Amri, Kol gabi abal vade machla. In the case of a chov that a woman has in, by the Baal, meaning that the Baal owes her money, and she herself, since she sold the ksuba, will not be able to collect that chov, that money masayim, is vadi machle. There's no question about it that she's on the side of the Baal, and she'll be mochel that chov and the ksuba right after the mechira. And afsedinu lahu dezvina biyadayim lafsedinu, and now we're putting this lokeach in a very strange situation that, you know, we're allowing her to sell the ksuba, and the lokeach is going to get nothing from this sale. We cannot actively get involved in such a scenario and force her to sell the ksuba, knowing full well up front that she'll be mochelis this ksuba, this chov, and the lokech will be left in the lurch, as we said before. He's holding on to a shtar that's worth the paper, but maybe just the paper, but that's about it. And therefore, we're not going to be mechayev her to sell her ksuba at the expense of the lokech. Of the chitema, zvina niale lahu dechavla bay. The Gemara comes up with an interesting, very sharp possibility. Why can't she sell her ksuba to the nechbal? And that money's, again, they don't actually have to be transferred from the Nechbal, who's buying the ksuba, over to the Isha, and then get it back again. No. Whatever amounts of money he would have paid for the ksuba, he now collects as Dmei Chavola. And he's a happy camper, because at least he's got something. Now we turn to Peites Amid Beis. D'i Machla. And now, even if at the end of the day she would be mocheles, and we assume she will, Gabi Baila, nevertheless, lo kamafsid, the nechbal doesn't lose by virtue of his purchase of the ksuba, even if she goes ahead, and we know, we anticipate she will be mocheles. Why? The hashtanami lo midika yovile. What's his other option? She has no money in her bank account. The nechbal is out in the cold. He gets nothing. At least Chach here, there's a chance that he'll get something. It's a win-win situation. He doesn't lose a thing. So why don't we get involved? Why shouldn't Beis Din get involved in compelling her to sell her ksuba v'tofes hanah to the nechbal? And the Gemara answers, sof sof, kol legabi baal, vadai machla. As far as the baal is concerned, she will definitely be mocheles. And therefore, atrichu beidina b'chdi lo matrichina, to force, to have the arm, the Beis Din get involved in this kind of mechira, which is not going to benefit anybody, and force her to sell the ksuba to the nechbal, that's a tircha imposed upon Beis Din that's considered a meaningless tircha. So let's just review. If we're assuming that a woman doesn't have to sell her ksuba in order to pay the nechbal because she's going to be mocheles, then Ella Hadasanya, again, let's look at this other Tosefta, and the Tosefta is addressing the case where she was choveles bebaila, v'chein hi shechovela bebaila lo hifsida ksubasa. In other words, we don't say that in lieu of payment of this, of these dmei chavola, the Baal has a right to reduce the amount of money that he pays for the ksuba v'amai to zavnine niale l'ksubasa l'baila b'tovas hanah. Let her sell the ksuba to her husband as a tovas hanah, and therefore he will be parted from paying the ksuba because she has to pay Dmei Chavola. And what are you going to tell me? De'i Mechala Legabi Baal. And what are you going to tell me, that she will go ahead and be Mocheles the Ksuba Legabi Baal is Lekab Seda? The Baal doesn't lose by that. In other words, if you're telling me that the whole reason why we don't want to force this sale when she was the Chovelis is because the buyer will take a loss, well, in this case, you know, the buyer is the Baal. He doesn't take any loss if she's mocheles. And the Gemara answers, ha, vadai Rabbi Meir, he. This Tosefta would certainly make sense if and only if it reflects the Shita Rabbi Meir, the Omar, Osur li Adam, Shiehei, Shiyashes, Ishto, Afilu, Shachas, Blok, Suba. And here too, the din of Rav Meir will kick in. Because time am I, the underlying reason of Rav Meir, as we discussed earlier, is Kadesh lo tehei, kala bi'enov lo tzia, that there should be this albatross hanging over his head that will inhibit him from simply getting angry and giving her a divorce because she ruined the lunch. And he knows that he's going to have to pay a serious amount of ksuba if he goes ahead and he divorces her. Is hacha here in this situation, if she will sell her ksuba to the Baal, is Megarish law, there's nothing to inhibit him from divorcing her. And it's not difficult for him to buy the ksuba, because he'll collect the mamanak ksuba for himself in lieu of the payment of her chavola. And therefore he'll be potur from paying the ksuba, because he collected that ksuba in lieu of the chavola. So therefore we must insist that she cannot sell the schus of her ksuba in lieu of the tashlumei chavola that she owes him, because if so, then yehi kala b'enov lo tzia. So the Gemara asks, yehochi hashtanami megarish la v'gavile b'chavle mina. You haven't solved the problem over here, because if you're worried about Shalote Kala, Isha Kala, Vein of Lotzia, here also, let him divorce her. El, what are you going to tell? He's going to have to pay the ksuba? No, at this point, she now is a grusha. She has her own financial bank account, and therefore she has to pay Dmei Chavola. And he's going to collect the Dmei Chavola for the most of the ksuba. So therefore, when we would encourage her to sell him the ksuba, that doesn't make it more kala b'enov lo tzia than if she doesn't sell him the ksuba, because in any event, he doesn't suffer any loss through the gerushin, because he's going to collect the monies of the ksuba in lieu of the dmei chavola. So why does Tosefta say that eino mafsida es ksubasa? And that was the lashon of the Tosefta. He shechavla b'bailo if sida ksubasa. And the Gemara answers, kigon, the case of the Tosefta is the nafish ksubasa. The value of haksuba exceeds by far that of the dmei chavola. And therefore, if he'll go ahead and divorce her, true, he'll collect some of that ksuba. He'll cut down his losses because he'll collect some as dmei chavola. But nevertheless, he's going to have to pay a significant amount for the ksuba. To mishum haipurta, for that small, relatively small amount of money that he'll collect for the dmei chavola, lo mafsituba, won't be kal dienov legarsha, because he's going to take a tremendous loss. Mafsituba will lose a significant amount of money. Monomasayim. Let's assume that Mona Masayim, let's say 200 zuz, maybe the Dmei Chavola is 5 zuz, but there's 195 zuz that's going to be hanging over his head that he'll have to pay her if he divorces her. So Gemara now is not happy with this. The E, the Nafish Ksubasa, Miksuba da Oraisa. If you're talking about the value of Haksuba being greater than Mona Masayim, for example, let's say he added a Tosefes Ksuba, so he was Mischayev in the Ksuba above and beyond the basic primary Chiyuv of Manu Masayim. Then, L'chor, we should go back to our question that she should be able to sell the Ksuba to her Baal and pay out the Dmei Chavola. Is Nukma Ksubasa da Oraisa? The idach tezavna niale bechavla bechavle. Why don't we establish that the chiv of the Baal to pay the ksuba is that chiv that he has to pay minat Torah, the mona masayin, and that itself will remove the problem of rabeirs of yekal bein of lotzia, because if he divorces, he'll have to pay the mona masayin. But as far as the Tosefis above, that he was mischayv above mona masayin, is let her sell the ksuba to her husband. Why does the Tosefta say she doesn't have to sell the ksuba to her husband? And the Baal will collect the Dmei Chavola from the Tosefta's ksuba. and you've accomplished all your goals. On the one hand, you've forced the Isha through sale of Ksuba to the Baal to pay up her Dmei Chavod. On the other hand, you still have the albatross, you know, revolving around over the head of the Baal to inhibit him from giving the Ksuba because of being Megarisha, because he'll have to pay Mona Masayim. And the Gemara answers, Kigon Delo Nefisha Ksubasa. That we're talking about a case where the value of the Ksuba is not so heavy. The Ksuba Doraisa, it doesn't exceed beyond Ksuba Doraisa. He didn't accept upon himself the Baal Echiv, a Eschaibus, to pay Tosefis Ksuba. And therefore, she cannot sell the Ksuba to the Baal, because if she does so, then she'll be living without a Ksuba. And that's why the Braisa says we're not going to force her to sell the Ksuba and lose the Ksuba, because then it'll be Shoah below Ksuba. And even though he can collect the Ksuba with Dmei Chavol Lach Gershin, and therefore you might say Eino Kalab Eino Legarsha, but Tahavi Chavla Arba Zuzay, let's say the value of the Dmei Chavol is up to 4 zuzim and not beyond. The Mishum Arba Zuzay Lo Mafsid Esrim V'Chamesh. Okay, we'll have to calculate the Esrim V'Chamesh, but basically the Esrim V'Chamesh is going to be equivalent to the difference between Arba Zuzi and Masayim Zuzi. In other words, again, we're trying to establish a method, a logic to justify the presentation of the Tosefta, that we cannot and will not force her in lieu of this Chavola to sell the Ksuba to her Baal. Because if she sells the Ksuba to her Baal, then they're going to be living without a Ksuba. What was your question? Even if she doesn't sell him the Ksuba, nevertheless, he is going to collect, after the Gerushin, he'll collect his Dmei Chavola, and therefore he'll collect his Dmei Chavola, therefore he's not inhibited to divorce. So the answer is, he'll still be very inhibited, because how much is the Dmei Chavola? It's 4 Zuzi. That's not going to inhibit him from divorcing her. You know, he's not going to be motivated to divorce her for the sake of collecting Dmei Chavola when he's going to have to pay the Ksuba and lose Esrim V'Chamesha Slaim, which is the equivalent of about Mea Zuz. And therefore, only way that you could fulfill Rabbi Meir's requirement of Shalotei Kalabain of Lotzia is if she retains ownership on the Ksuba. If she sells the Ksuba to the Baal, then he has already purchased the Ksuba. There's nothing hanging over his head. Ella, what you can ask, well, in any event, he's motivated, so to speak, to divorce her because he'll collect the Mechavola, but the Mechavola is relatively a pittance. So he still has the inhibition, and he doesn't want to divorce his wife. Now, the premise that we were operating with until now is that she could sell Tosefes Ksuba, if there was Tosefes Ksuba. Gemara asks, Ella Hadesanya, we have a brisa that seems to indicate that there is no sale of Tosefes Ksuba. What does that mean? It says in the brisa, Kishem Shalotimkar, that just like she cannot sell her ksuba v'hitachtov while she's married to her husband, because then she'll be stuck without a ksuba, is kachlo tafsid v'hitachtov. The Gemara understands at this point that what is the Tosefta trying to tell me here? What's it teaching me? That she doesn't lose to make ksubasa in any event, even if she was Choveles Bo. And the Braisa says this as an unqualified statement. So the Gemara asks, Vaha Zimnin Mishkachle Demafsida. There are situations in which she'll lose her Ksuba if she was Choveles Bo. Vehechi Domi Kigon Dinafish Ksubasim Ksuba Doraisa. Let's say that he had been Mishchayev Etosefes Ksuba. Now her ksuba is worth a great deal more than, let's say, the Iker ksuba that's Mona Masayim Midoraisa. For example, let's say he was Mischayev 500 zuz. So now she can sell her ksuba to the Baal, and there's no chash of teheikala b'ein of lotzia. She's not going to be mochelis the ksuba, because obviously she wants to collect this massive amount of ksuba. How then, or why then, does the Braisa assume that lo tafsid v'itachtav, that in any case of a chavola, she doesn't sell haksuba? L'chorah, she can sell haksuba to the Baal to pay the dmei chavola, and still there will be lo teikala b'enov lo tzia, and certainly she is not going to be mochel l'ksuba to him because she wants to collect this massive amount. The Gemara answers, Amar Rava, Seifa, this part of the Tosefta is a son, Liksubas Benin Dichrin. And in the case of Ksubas Benin Zichrin, that there was a Tnai Bezin, that if she dies during the lifetime of her husband, and she cannot collect her Ksuba, then later on when her husband, who's the father of these Yarshim, of these children, dies, then the takana was made that Kshemesa Av is the bonim, the male children, inherit from the Isha, the Dmei Ksubasa. In other words, as far as the balance, the rest of the Yerusha, they divide it with the other children that were born from a different marriage. But as far as the ksuba is concerned, then her children, her yarshim, have rights to collect the ksuba, even though their mother died b'chai baal. If she didn't collect her ksuba, then when the father dies later, the husband dies later, these banim zcharim from this woman, they exclusively have rights to the dmei ksubasa. They don't have to share it with the other yarshim of their father, who were not related to this ksuba. They have no shaykhis to this ksuba. They came from a different wife. V'hachi tani, and here's what the Braisa has in mind. Kishem shemocheres ksubasa lacherim. Just as if she would sell her ksuba to other people, who would buy it such that if her husband would die first, or divorce her, they would collect that ksuba. And the halacha is that if she dies before her husband, they don't collect it, the lokeach doesn't collect anything. Is lo hifsida, she did not forfeit the zchus that she has of ksubas banin dichrin. And therefore, after the death of her husband, her sons will receive the dmei ksuba from the Rush Sabal. And we don't say that she was a poshea here by selling the ksuba, because the rights of the banin zichrin still remain despite the sale of the ksuba. And if she were alive, she would not be able to be gover to collect this ksuba. By virtue of the fact that she sold the ksuba, now she's cutting out her banim. No, we don't say that she cuts out her banim. And there was an element of shia maitaima. Why don't the banim lose their rights to this ksuba in so far as she sold it to acherim? The answer is they could claim zuzi hu dan suha. She had to sell the ksuba because she was pressed for money, and that's called honest. There was circumstance beyond her control, but she didn't want to be mafsa the entire ksuba, even as far as banim zikran are concerned. And the brisa says kach hamocheres ksubas labayla. So too, in the case where she sells the ksuba not on the open market to Yenim, to somebody else, but she sells the ksuba to her own husband, even though she lost her ksuba, nevertheless, lo efsida ksubas banim dichrin, my taima zuzi hu dian suha. She doesn't undermine the takana and the rights of banim zichrin, of her sons, to inherit their rights in the Yerusha from their father. And the reason for that is because, again, it was a great need for money, for cash, that forced her to sell the ksuba to her husband. She never intended to be mafsid the zchus that she has of ksubas banim dichrin, and that zchus is hers. and she never forfeits or sells that tzchus. That wasn't included in her das makna. And this more or less ends the part of the sugya here on Peites Amid Beis that's relevant to ksuba. At this point, we go back to the dinim of Eved Knani. And you may recall that we derived from a parsha in Mishpatim, Shvos Chaf Aleph, that an Eved Knani is Yotze L'Cheris Bit Shein V'Ayin. If the master takes out his eye or his tooth, then the Eved goes out free. And now the Gemara here on Peites Amid Beis is going to quote more than one brisa to deal with the case of an Eved Knani that belonged to an Isha. And she got married. And when she brings in the Eved Knani into this marriage, the Lechora, the Baal, now has rights to the Eved Knani, as he possesses the Eved Knani. And whose Hapola Shein V'Ayin will generate a, what it says, Lachovshi Shalchenu, who's going to send him free? Meaning, who owns this Eved Knani? And the Gemara says, L'chora, this might relate to what we discussed earlier with regard to Takonas Usha. And that is Lema Takonas Usha, that if a woman sells her Nichsei Malug while her husband is alive, then she dies before her husband, the Baal has a right to take these nechasim and rip them out of the hands of the lokeach, or shall we say, prevent the lokeach from taking it out of the hands of the Baal. Tanoihi, perhaps this takonis usha really in effect is dependent upon a machlokis tanoim. The tani chada avde malug yotzim b'shein v'ayin la'isha avalola ish. That fundamentally the owner of the Eved, in the case of Nichsei Malug, is the Isha. Why? Because the Guf Eved is coming to the Isha. The Baal only gets the payros, but the Guf is hers. And whoever owns the Guf has the primary and fundamental essential ownership over the object. And therefore, in the case of the Eved, she owns the object, despite the fact that she married and the Nichsei Malug. And therefore, when she takes out the eye of the Eved, or the shein of the Eved, the Gufa Eved is Kani La, and therefore the Eved is Yotze Birashe Varm, Avalola Ish. But if the Baal takes out the eye or the tooth of the Eved, the Eved doesn't go Lecheris, because the Gufa Eved is not his, it only belongs to the Isha. He only has Peros. V'tanya, either, but there's another brisa that argues with that and says that lola ish for lola isha, that since both the ish and the isha have equal ownership over the eved, the isha has a partial ownership in terms of guf, the ish has partial ownership in terms of the peros, neither of them are the real full-fledged owners of this eved, such that the eved would go lecherus with hapolas shein v'ayin. Savrua, the Gemara assumes that the Kuli Alma, everybody agrees, in both prices is Kinyan Peros, Lavka Kinyan Aguf Domi. He who owns the Kinyan Peros does not have anything more than his Chusish Tamshus, but it's not considered that he owns anything in the Guf HaDavar. He has this abstract Kinyan of Peros. And therefore, the ownership of the Baal with regard to Peros does not in any way detract or limit the Bailus of the Isha. And let's say in the case of an Eved, she owns the Gufa Eved, and Kinyan Peros, Lavka Kinyan Guf, the Baal's rights to the Eved did not undermine or limit her rights to the Eved. She has the Guf. And therefore the second brisa that says that if the Isha takes out the Shein V Eved, or Ayin of the Eved does not go Lecherus, what's that all about? If everybody agrees that Kinyan Peros Lav ki Kinyan Aguf Tomi, my Lav Behaka Mifliki demand the Omar La Isha, according to the first brisa that says that she takes out the Shein and Ayin and the Eved goes free, less late Takanta the Usha. That brisa rejects the Takon of Usha, and therefore she can sell the Nichsei Malug, and the Kinyan is a complete total Kinyan. Lokeach will, after her death, receive the Nichsei Malug, even though she died during the lifetime of her husband, the Baal has no rights to take the properties from the Lekuchos. And since the Baal has no rights to take the Lekuchos, based on the fact that she had a Kinyan Aguf and her sale was valid, and we're omitting the Takana of Usha, is therefore she's considered the owner of the Evet to such an extent that she could sell the Evet on the open market, and the Baal has no right to break up that Mechira because there's no Takana Usha. So her Kinyan Aguf defines her as the total owner of this Evet. Umandiyom, according to the second Brisa that says that she, even if she takes out the Shem V'ayin, the Eved does not go free. Lola Ish v'lola Isha. Islay Takonas Usha. He accepts the Takonas Usha. And therefore, even though she owns the Gufa Eved, as Nichsei Malug, but nevertheless she cannot sell the Eved in an irreversible, absolute kind of a kinyan. The Baal, if she dies first, can take the karka out of the yad, out of the hands of the Lekuchos. And the Chachamim really gave a very strong power to the Baal in terms of his ownership over the Nichsei Malug, even though normally the universal rule is Kinyan Peres Lavka Kinyan Aguf, but here's the exception in the case of Nichsei Malug. By virtue of the Takonis Usha, the Baal has fundamental primary Kinyanim in the Nichsei Malug to such an extent that he could be Akev, he could block the sale of the Isha of Nichsei Malug, which we call Motzi Miyad HaLekuchos, meaning it's not just that she has a Kinyan Aguf and he has a Kinyan Peros, it's much more than that. His Kinyan is very fundamental insofar as he undermines her Yad, her ability to sell Nichsei Malug, and therefore her ownership over the Eved is very limited. And therefore when she knocks out the eye or the tooth of the Eved does not go Lecheris because she's not the real Adon, she's not the real Bailin. And the Mela, according to this presentation of the Gemara, the issue of Takonas Usha yes or Takonas Usha nay is a machlokas between two brisos in terms of hapolas roshei evarim in the case of an Eved of Nichsei Malug. The Gemara says, lo, that's not the right way of learning the brisos. Kuli alma islay Takonas Usha. Both brisos accept Takonas Usha. And therefore, a woman cannot sell Nichsei Malug in an irreversible way. The Chachamim gave the Shibu, the Zchus of the Baal in Peros, an upgrade in such a way that it's not called a Kinyan, a Peros Bilvad, the Alma, but rather it's as if his Kinyan undermines the Kinyan of the Isha, and that explains very well in the light of Takonas Usha, the second Brisa, that the Eved doesn't go out by Pol Hashem V'ayin on the part of the Isha. Ella, Kan kodim takana, kan li acher takana. The first price is talking before the takana sush historically. And there, at that point, there was no zchus of the Baal in Nichsei Malug beyond universal Kinyan Peros. He doesn't have a Kinyan Aguf. The woman could sell the property to a buyer on the market. In this case, the Eved could be sold on the market to Lokech in such a way that the Baal has no rights to undermine that Mechira and take the Eved out of the hands of the Lokech, and therefore she is the prime owner of the Eved, the proud owner of the Eved, and therefore it's Yotzi B'Shem V'Yayin, that's the first price of a Kan, but the second price is Liachar Takana, when the Chachamim upgraded the Kinyan of the Baal from that of a universal minimal Kinyan of Peros to a fundamental Kinyan, almost like a Kinyan Aguf, such that he could block her ability, even though she owns the Guf HaEved, to sell the Eved. In such a case, she now has been removed, so to speak, by virtue of Takonis Usha of a full-fledged Kinyan Aguf on the Eved, and therefore, Eina Yotze B'Shein, the Ayin of the Isha, the Bais Ema. The Gemara wants to suggest another possibility, Idi V'Idi, Li'achar HaTakana. Both prices are talking after Takana's Usha. And again, we understand the second Brisa very well. But what do we do with the first Brisa that her HaPol Hashem V'ayin is Motzi, the Eved, the Islahu Takana's Usha. And both prices accept Takana's Usha, and therefore the Baal could be Ma'akiv, he could block her ability to sell the Eved. Ella, Lemandi Omar, la'isha, v'lo la'ish, according to the first brayso that says that the eved goes out with his, excuse me, with her, hapola shein v'ayin. My time, why is this so? And it's all based on Rava. Even though the Baal, again, has the shibud of takanas usha, and his shibud, his kinyan and schus in the eved, in the nichsei melug, was strengthened and upgraded by the takanas usha, nevertheless, her hapola shein v'ayin is capable of being motzi the eved l'cheiris, but not his, in the first place. And why is that kidirava, the omar rava? And here we turn to the Afsadi Omid Aleph. Rava says, Hegdesh chametz v'shichur mafkim midei shibud. That if, for example, the properties of a lova who borrowed money from a malva on meshuba to the malva, let's say, for example, the lova owns an ox, a shor, and it's meshubad, again through apotiki, to the malva. And now the lova goes ahead and he's magdish the shor to mizbeach. That's called kedushas haguf. In such a case, is mafkia midei shibud. And the malva could collect his chov from someplace else, but not from the shor, because the hegdish is chal, and that removes the ability through shibudim of the malva to collect that shor, if the lova defaults on his loan. Chametz, and this is a case of a guy who is hilve kesef li Yisrael, and the now the chametz is meshubad to the guy as in lieu of piron chov. And in such a case, even though the chametz is not sitting in the reshus of the nachri, it's only a mashkon to back up the chov, when Pesach comes around and the chametz becomes osur b'ano, that itself is going to be mafkia the shibud. Belinetta will come back to this in the next year. But shichra, this is the part of Rava's statement that's most important for us. The shichra of an Eved Knani, who is meshuba to the malve for gvias chov, and then the lova was meshachar the Eved, and the Eved now has a full-fledged Kedushas Yisrael as a result of the shtar shichra, that's mafkia midei shibud. That means that the malva cannot collect from the Eved. And here too, in the case of an Eved that was nichsei molug, true, the Eved is meshuba to the Baal, to the husband, for achilas peros, but nevertheless, when the woman, the isha, takes out the eye or the tooth of the eved, then it's as if she had written a shtar shichur to the eved, and that shtar shichur is mafkia, the shibud of the Baal. And if that be the case, we understand very well why the eved, according to the first brisa, is yotze b'shein v'yayin of the isha. The only problem with this explanation is it comes out that Rava, who holds that shichur is mafkia midei shibud, that is reflected very beautifully in the first brisa, but not in the second brisa, because the second brisa maintains that the isha, if she takes out the shein v'yayin, is not enough to be mashachar the eved. Why not say that the shichur here would be mafkia midei shibud? Who cares about the Baal and his ownership rights and kinyan peiros in the nichsei melug in the eved? So that Belineder will pick up in the next year.